Child support is often a point of controversy after parents separate. Even though the federal government designed the child support guidelines in 1997 to bring objectivity and predictability to setting the amount of child support, and has updated the support table several times to reflect the cost of raising a child, many people disagree with the amount set, or even the concept of child support. Some parents pursued shared parenting only to avoid child support. It is common for parents to try to resolve matters after separation without a requirement for child support. The extent to which that is possible is the topic of this episode of the Ontario Family Law Podcast. I'm John Schumann, a certified specialist in family law in Ontario. I'm also a mediator, arbitrator, and collaborative lawyer. This podcast is a companion to my book, Guide to the Basics of Ontario Family Law, which is available on the iBookstore, Amazon, Kobo, and in fine bookstores. For the most part, child support is mandatory, and there are very few circumstances when parents can get out of paying it. I will explain why and go over when child support pursuant to the tables in the child support guidelines is not required. As a starting point, the law, both written and many court decisions, are very clear that child support is the right of the child. It is not the right of a parent, and so parents should not be giving away something that belongs to their child. So important is the concept of child support that, as I said in episode 79, setting up child support is one of the first legal obligations that parents have after separating. While if they stay out of family court, parents can agree or acquiesce that there won't be any child support, section 15.1 sub 5 of the Divorce Act, which applies to married parents, and section 33 sub 11 of the Family Law Act, which applies to unmarried parents, both say that a judge can only make child support as set out in the child support guidelines. So if at any point one of the parents decides that he or she wants child support, that parent can just go to court and any agreement for no child support will be meaningless.
Oh, yeah.
The judge will just order child support and can order that it be paid retroactively, even though the parents agreed to no child support, because a judge can only order go forward or retroactive child support in accordance with the child support guidelines. Except in some very limited circumstances. A judge can respect, even order the parties to follow, the terms of agreement that benefit the child more than a strict application of the child support guidelines, and does so to an extent it would be inequitable in light of those provisions. For example, to keep a child in that child's home, a parent could walk away from his or her interest in that property and not receive any money for his or her share of the property.
Ouch.
The child gets to stay in the same house, which the other parent could not afford if he or she had to buy out the other parent. This may benefit the child more than receiving child support. This type of transfer of property is specifically contemplated by the legislation, but it is a dangerous proposition for the parent who walks away, because if down the road the parent in the house runs out of money to look after the child, judges can forget about the deal or decide that it wasn't good for the child and order child support again. Another example is where a parent does not pay child support but pays everything for a child's extraordinary expenses. That expense could be rep hockey or horseback riding or private school or university or some other large expense. Another example is where a parent moves away with the kids and the other parent has to pay huge travel expenses just to see the children. In all these circumstances, the parent may end up paying more for that expense than he or she would have to pay for the child under the child support guidelines. So the child benefits more. Parents often talk about financial hardship as being a reason why they should not have to pay child support. Section 10 of the child support guidelines does recognize that there are circumstances where child support should be reduced due to financial hardship caused to the support payer. However, to get that reduction, there must be significant financial hardship, and it results in a reduction of child support, not no child support whatsoever. Just having to pay child support will not in itself result in the required level of financial hardship. There has to be other considerations present, such as having large travel expenses to be able to have parenting time, or the parent went into an unusually high degree of debt during the relationship to provide for the children, or the parent has to pay support for other children. But with regard to the last factor, judges do not have a lot of sympathy towards parents who keep having kids when they can't support the ones they have. They also use a first family first principle, so that the oldest kids who are entitled to support get the full amount, and only after that is a reduction considered. But in addition to needing those circumstances, a judge will only allow a reduction in support if the standard of living in the support payer's household, which includes all income earners, not just the support payer, is lower than in the support recipient's household. There's a formula for figuring this out found in Schedule 2 of the Child Support Guidelines, and it is not an easy test to meet. So parents should not rely on hardship of one parent as being a justification for not paying child support. If the parent who would receive support decides to go to court, it is very likely that the judge will ignore the agreement and order child support and back child support out of concern over the child suffering financial hardship. The government carefully calculated the tables to provide for an appropriate amount of support for children at each income level. Section 3.2 of the Child Support Guidelines explicitly provides more wiggle room for the amount of child support for children over the age of 18. As I went over in episode 18 and in greater detail in my book, the obligation to pay child support extends past the child's 18th birthday if the child is unable to become financially independent because he or she is in full-time school or disabled. But there are a much broader range of options for how parents can financially support that child.
Oh.
Some parents agree to pay all the post-secondary education costs instead of paying any base child support. Some pay the child's housing costs instead. Others work out arrangements to cover the child's expenses rather than paying base child support. For children over 18, it is not necessary that the arrangement benefit the child more than payments pursuant to the child support guidelines, but they often work out to being about the same. Still, it is possible to have an agreement that sets no child support for a child over the age of 18. In cases of shared parenting or split parenting, the idea is that the parents pay the full applicable table amount to each other, which allows them to claim all the related tax deductions and benefits. Where one parent makes more than the other, that still results in that parent paying a net amount of support.
Oh.
Some parents set the amounts off, rather than having both pay them, but that risks losing tax deductions and benefits.
Ouch.
Where the parents' incomes are approximately equal, a judge would not be concerned if the parents set off the support amounts, and as a result, no child support was payable. However, the parents still risk losing some tax advantages by doing that. Also, depending on the circumstances, and particularly where spousal support is also a factor, the reduction in child support due to shared parenting can be less than the additional cost in looking after the kids, and can also result in an increase in spousal support. It is best for parents to pursue shared custody out of genuine desire to parent the children and not to reduce child support. Parents should speak to a family lawyer about their specific situation to find out how any particular support situation will work out for them financially. As I went over in episode 24 and 42, it is important to speak to a good family law lawyer before entering in any type of parenting or support agreement. There are a lot of circumstances where an agreement that provides for no child support will just not hold up and could result in some bad financial consequences for the parent who should have paid child support. There are other circumstances where not paying child support results in things working out worse financially. You can reach my office to speak with me or one of my colleagues by calling 416-446-5847. If you need some more general family law or children's law guidance, or you need to understand Ontario family law better so you can make better decisions. If you need to know the best parenting options after separation, or if you need to understand how finances work during a marriage or common law relationship and after separation or divorce, get a copy of my book, Guide to the Basics of Ontario Family Law. You can access it immediately on the iBookstore, on Amazon for the Kindle version, or you can download it for Kobo. Amazon can deliver the paperback version directly to your doorstep. You can also get a lot more Ontario Family Law information on www.schumannlaw.ca. Not only are there hundreds of pages of Family Law information and links, but there are links to get my book and links to reach my office to meet with either me or one of my colleagues. You can also set up an appointment to speak with us by calling 416-446-5847. It is always best to get a lawyer who can give you specific advice that is specific to your situation. In addition to my website, keep up to date on family and children's law issues by liking my Facebook page, following me on Twitter at @SchumannFamLaw, and finding me on LinkedIn. Of course, please subscribe to my YouTube channel and hit the notification bell to keep up to date. You can get the audio versions of the Ontario Family Law Podcast on all major podcast services, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many more. Or you can get all the episodes at www.schumannlaw.ca. Just look for podcasts in the drop-down menu. Thanks for participating in this podcast. We will get together again soon.